Welcome, everyone, to today's episode of The Lindsay Elmore Show. Today, I interview Barb Stegman. She is the author of The Seven Virtues of the Philosopher Queen, a woman's guide to living and leading in an illogical world. Using Stoic wisdom and the words of great philosophers, Barb encourages women to harness our collective power to create the world that we want to live in. Her book was inspired by her friend's journey through Afghanistan and her desire to end war and poverty in that country. It's a wonderful read for any woman seeking direction in leadership and how we can create communities out of uncertain times by leveraging our collective buying power. It's honestly so much more than just that. It is steeped in wisdom and in a simple knowing that we already have all that we need to create the world that we want to live in. Let's get to the show. Welcome to The Lindsay Elmore Show, a podcast that helps you find fulfillment amidst chaos. On this show, I interview thought leaders, doctors, creatives, spiritual gurus, and game changers who inspire you to pursue your dreams, overcome obstacles, and leave your mark. After her best friend was severely wounded fighting in Afghanistan, Barb Stegman was inspired to help bring peace to this war-torn country. And she realized that ensuring stability for its people was a key way to support the Afghani economy and to make sure that change was effective and long-term. The vision of her company was born. The Seven Virtues offers clean fragrance products with organic fair trade essential oils sourced from a variety of countries that are being rebuilt after the war of strife, such as Afghanistan, Rwanda, and Haiti. Barb and I talk about so much more than just fragrances today. Her best-selling book, The Seven Virtues of a Philosopher Queen, was penned with the vision of inspiring and empowering women to launch their own company and create future generations of budding entrepreneurs alongside ending the bullying that can so often happen with women in business. Barb has been recognized as one of the 100 most powerful women in Canada. She won the Ernst & Young Entrepreneur of the Year Award in the Emerging Entrepreneur category. She was ranked in Profit Guides Magazine's top 30 cool and fabulous Canadian entrepreneurs among many, many other accolades. She is an inspirational individual with a unique entrepreneurial vision that has allowed her to revolutionize industries, all while bringing motivation and care that helps people to overcome adversity and embrace their inner disruptor. Barb Stegman, welcome to the Lindsay Elmore Show.
Hi, Lindsay. Thanks for having me.
I was devouring your book this morning in preparation for our discussion, and I love how in The Seven Virtues of a Philosopher Queen, there is so much diversity in the advice that you give women on how do we live a life in a very illogical world. And I love the beginning of the book. It says the philosopher queen is a woman who is rational under any circumstances. That's the stoicism that you're bringing into the equation. She uses reason over emotion. Lord, help us all. She is grounded in self-awareness and authenticity. This enables her to lead through challenges and transition. Her self-awareness allows her to assess and take on risks and challenges. She seeks excellence and not perfection, and she always chooses kindness over excellence, and her philosophical direction is the crucial foundation for living the good life. When I read that, I was like, there is no way that Barb learned all of this all overnight. I have a feeling you have many a story of struggles and trials and tribulations that led you to write this book. So take us back 12 years when you first start thinking, maybe I should write a book. What had you been through that allowed you to see with such clarity what women need to do to thrive in this crazy world?
That is an excellent question, girl.
Thank you.
You are wise. I'll tell you, I think being raised in poverty by a single mom and watching my mom always try to advance herself and constantly being judged. You know, she was a school teacher, but she fell sick and she wasn't really able to present herself in the way the world would expect her to. And so she was kind of judged and marked. And watching her go through these battles of trying to offer her services to volunteers, she had the greatest soul and spirit and prayed for us all the time. And, you know, really, it was always having my mom in my mind that we don't really look through the lens of those in the most need. And so for those of us in leadership, no matter where we are in leadership, if we always look through the lens of those who have the least and the most in need, then we will know what to do. And so that shaped me. And then fast forward, you know, went to university, took out student loans, showed up at university with $5 in my pocket. I had no sheets for my bed. My roommate gave me sheets. I spent my last $5 on a 6-pack of beer and my life began. That was I found my new people, and one of those people was Captain Green, this amazing friend of mine who I dedicated the book to. And he and I rowed together, and he would always push me to ask better questions, to row harder. We studied philosophy and journalism together, all that stoic wisdom. And then, you know, fast forward, a normal life in BC, my kids worrying about the things you worry about in the suburbs. You know, do I need a new car? My weight? Are my kids being bullied? I need to move them. What do I do? Is it my turn to take the oranges to soccer? All those crazy things that fill your head in your life in the burbs. And then all of a sudden, my best friend, that wonderful man who mentored me at King's and didn't judge me when I showed up with no sheets for my bed and $5 in my pocket. Maybe he just wanted to drink the beer with me, but he was in Afghanistan serving in the forces. And you know, he's such a great man. Took his helmet off in a peaceful shura. He was at where you're to be respected in Afghanistan. So if you take your helmet off in a peaceful shura, no one's to touch you. Even if you're the enemy, it doesn't matter. And so he was there discussing how to bring clean drinking water and healthcare to the families, the village. And a young man who was so dirt poor and illiterate, the Taliban gave him $5 to go kill a soldier. It happened to be Trevor. He put an axe through his head. He was not supposed to make it through the night. We prayed and we had healing vigils, and he made it through the night. And then we went on a long healing journey, and really the book was sparked by, you know, going and visiting him in the hospital and saying, you know, you go heal, I got this. And I realized, I don't got this. I'm not a brave soldier. I'm not a world leader. And I thought, wait a second, women own the buying power. 80% of all household decisions are made by women. We own the voting power, 52% of the voting power. If we held hands tomorrow, entire governments would rise and fall at our collective vote, which we just witnessed. I thought, let me just take that stoic wisdom of Churchill and Aurelius and all the boys that they all used and give it to my sisters, because my mom couldn't talk to me about those things. She taught me other beautiful things. Bless her, but I didn't get that stoic strength teaching from her, and I thought many of my sisters probably didn't. And so I wrote it to empower women to launch companies, end bullying, run for office, and develop the thick skin you need, but at the same time keep that tender heart and that presence and that openness that really empowers us as women to create companies, movements that change the world. So that's really where it all began. And I thought it was like an obsession. I spent 2 years writing it. I would get up every morning at 4 and write, and then at 7, go get the kids organized and take them to school. And I launched on International Women's Day, and it broke even that weekend. So anybody out there thinking about writing a book, do it. The one thing I thought about was, you know, I don't have the money to do this. My kitchen cupboards were kind of hanging off the hinges. Racks in the tile. I thought I could spend this $9,000 on printing books, or I could fix my kitchen. And I zapped myself to 85, and I said, when I'm 85, will I remember the kitchen? No. But will I remember having published that book that could change lives? So I did it, went for it, and the book broke even that weekend. And I really feel that if you've got a burning passion, get it out of your system. Don't have any regrets, right? This is one short, sweet life. So yeah, that's how it all happened. But I would say the spark was, the impetus was, you know, getting fired up, getting mad about what happened to my friend and doing something with that anger. I think.
Yes.
We get constructive.
Hell hath no fury like a woman scorned. And that scorn can either turn into something dramatically positive and life-affirming, or it can kill you. It can do either one. So
difference, isn't it?
Yes.
Stoic difference.
Talk to us about talk to us about stoicism. I have mentioned it on the podcast where, you know, you think about, we cannot control what's happening in the world around us. All we can control is our internal environment. And I love, absolutely, and I love throughout your book, many of the quotes that you have from thinkers on stoicism. A lot of people think that to be stoic means that you lack emotion. So talk to us about how beautifully wonderful emotional creatures like women can also embody stoicism.
That's right. Well, you know, we can be passionate and excited. I am a person who wakes up and goes, oh my God, I've got the greatest idea. Let's go. I am incredibly passionate. But I really am clearer on being stoic, which can still allow you to be passionate. It's just that I'm very clear through the daily practice, like a muscle, you have to rip it. You do a push-up, you rip that muscle. You do the same thing with every time someone judges you. Every time something bad happens, every time you don't get what you want, what do you do as a leader? What do you do as a leader? And one of my favorite quotes that I tell my children, I've been telling them since they were little, Marcus Aurelius led through war, strife. His book, The Meditation, sits on the bedside tables of the greatest leaders. He said, when you wake up, be prepared to meet the angry, the lost, the jealous, the jaded. Now lead. Oh, you're surprised? If you don't like it, then go in the corner in the fetal position. But if you want to be in a role of leadership and do your service on this earth and share your gifts that are not your right to keep to yourself, then you're going to have to wake up and meet the angry, the lost, the jealous, the jaded, give it no energy. He also said, you meet people, they have ghosts around them. They talk about what someone said about them. Why would you hand your power over? Handing your power and your dignity over because someone said something? Who cares if someone doesn't like your idea? 20% of the people aren't going to like you anyway. If someone doesn't like you because you remind them of their cousin, there's nothing you can do about it. So please spend no time on it. And that's stoicism. So that's all what I just sort of went through right there is the idea of how we can look at life not going to plan, but with those tools, that toolkit that we can take from, I mean, these great thinkers who did all the work for us. It's all there. You can sit and talk to Plato. You can sit and talk to Mary Wollstonecraft, the mother of feminism, one of the greatest philosophers of all time, who said, the beginning is always today. Who cares?
Yeah. Oh.
That's the stuff, right? That's the stuff. And that fires me up. And I think that we didn't necessarily get taught that. If you have as a woman, you're blessed. I wasn't. And so I want all my sisters to have that wisdom so that when life doesn't go to plan, they're okay. Yeah, have a cry. It's okay. It's all right. And then let's go.
Yes. And I think that it is critically important what you said. You know, we all go through this world and you have a choice when you meet those angry people or the frustrated people. Do you become angry? Do you become frustrated? And that is something that you absolutely can avoid. So you go through 7 virtues of the philosopher queen, and you sum them up as wonder, balance, truth, courage, justice, wisdom, and beauty. How did you land on these 7? And can you give us just a crash course in each of them?
Yeah, sure. So I started with the 4 stoic that Churchill always used. You know, he went through unimaginable hell to bring us to safety. And, you know, people being swayed. You know, people that don't have a mission where they're going in life can be swayed. That's another reason why we have to have a mission statement for your life where you're going. So I took the 4 stoic, truth, courage, justice, wisdom, and then I added 3 more because it's a book for women and men, but primarily women. I added wonder, balance, which was originally moderation, but you know, women wear like courage necklaces, but nobody wears moderation. So I changed it to balance.
For sure.
Right. And then beauty. So wonder instead of judgment. Plato believed, who wrote The Republic, that this is based upon, that everything you need will appear guaranteed if you're present. But if you're judging yourself or other people, you're going to miss everything in front of you. And we don't realize that we judge ourselves. I was born with a hearing impairment. I didn't know till I was 21. You know, when you're in poverty, hearing test. I mean, they gave me glasses. That's how people fall between the cracks. Just give her glasses. Mm-hmm. That'll fix it. Don't worry about it.
Aww.
Yeah. All my life, I always lean in. I use my hands because I think you're hearing impaired too. So this is how I live, because we all think everyone's like us.
Mm-hmm.
All my life, people would say to me, you're so intense, because I lean in to read lips. And they are so intense. And they would sort of screw their faces up as they said it. And so all my life, I just kind of accepted that. And one day I went to a conference, and this the former CEO of Vancouver Canucks was speaking, Brian Burke, and he had his 10 commandments. And one of them was, be intense. And I was like, yes. I went up to him afterwards. And I said, Mr. Burke, thank you. All my life, I've been told I'm intense. But from this day forth, I'm going to own it. And do you know what happened, Lindsay, from that point forth?
Tell me.
No one ever called me intense. Do you know
because why? Because you weren't intense. It's just you.
I was judging myself. My body language, which is how we read each other, I was apologizing. So if I got too excited, I'd rein it in without realizing. And so once I stopped, everyone accepted me, because obviously with conviction, I walked in. And so that's the idea of wonder. You know, we work really hard not to judge others and get rid of ideas we were taught that are wrong and undo that negativity. But do we really work on not judging ourselves? So wonder is where everything begins. Balance, of course, you know, Plato called it the tripartite soul, the body, mind, soul balance. And, you know, we work out, we read a book, but it's about honoring our soul. Understanding that you were given a divine soul, and yet you have this broken mortal body. It has anxiety, has a hearing impairment, was born in poverty, whatever that may be. And our daily exercise is to become worthy of the divine soul. And then by the end of our lives, when we die, the two will marry. That's the idea. So you bumble along in life, trying to become worthy of the soul. And the only way you can explain it is it's your instincts. Trusting them. And some would call it God, some would call it instinct, some would call it whatever you want to call it, nature. We won't know the mystery till we die, but it is bigger than us. And we were given this dynamic soul. And the moment you dock into that and actually understand that your soul is divine, body in the balance is in one and in harmony. And so we call it the good life. So wonder, balance, truth. You know, if you have anyone undermining you in your life, remove them. Like right now, like don't call them right now, maybe tonight, but like remove them. You don't need anyone undermining you in your life whatsoever. I don't care who they are. It's hard. I've done it before. That's a longer story over wine, but it has to be done. Wonder, balance, truth, courage. You know, courage. I think the best example of courage that I've ever seen in anything I've read is Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning. He survived the Holocaust. He lost his wife. He lost his book. And while he was in hell, in the Holocaust, in Germany, one night he looked out through the barbed wire fence and he saw this glorious sunset. It was purple and orange and red, and he was washed over with joy. And he realized in that moment that no one can take your joy from you, ever. Mm-hmm. And he called it logotherapy. And we used it with Captain Green, this strapping, gorgeous man that was axed in the head, that came back and was like this for 2 years, couldn't even speak. We would remind him, the sound of your daughter's laugh, the stroke of Debbie's hand on your cheek, that's your joy and no one can take it from you. I protect my joy fiercely. I won't even read an email if I don't want to read it. No one takes my joy from me, right? I don't want everyone to protect their joy fiercely. That's courage. Justice. Philosophers believe that justice is all the other virtues in play. So if we do all the hard work on the others, everything will be just. We're not there yet, but that means it's up to all of us as citizens. The next one's wisdom. I want to have the wisdom of Solomon by the time I'm 96. That's my mission statement. And, you know, what I do is I follow the smart people. Seek what they seek, do what they do, follow them. And with a mission statement, which is to obtain the wisdom of Solomon by the time I'm 96, because I know when I'm 96, just before I die, someone's going to ask me what to do. I'm going to know the answer and then I'm going to die. And it'll have been a great trip.
Yeah.
All my life with that mission statement, and it's very important to do the exercises to drill down to get your mission statement, because then if you know where you're going, no one can knock you off. Mm. And then the last one's beauty. Beauty in the Michelangelo sense. Michelangelo, one of the greatest sculptors, philosophers of all time. He believed that beauty is expression over form. So what's form? If you're born in the Twig era and you're skinny, they'd say that's your beauty. He'd say that's not your beauty. You're born in the Renaissance and you're voluptuous. They would measure you by that and say that's your beauty. He said that's your form. That's not your expression. He said your expression is your power and your dignity. That's your beauty. And if we taught our daughters that their beauty is their power and their dignity, we wouldn't lose women to the streets. We wouldn't lose women to, in Canada, the $8 billion annually cost for wife battery. I think it's in the almost 30 million in the US. You have a bigger population than us. And if we taught our daughters that their beauty is their power and their dignity, we wouldn't lose women to eating disorders. It's one of the things, food is such an issue for so many of us. And it's because, you know, the ideal of beauty was always either Twiggy or that is not it. So if we teach our daughters and ourselves that your beauty is your power and your dignity, never hand it over, never let anyone take it from you. But even if you don't agree with someone, respect their power and dignity, we'll get to a good place. And that applies to world leaders that you know, which we're seeing now. It applies to all of us as individuals. And that's our beauty, not the airbrushed images, not this ideal created by the patriarchy. And more women living that way, we're going to start changing the conversation and the way beauty is perceived. So those are the seven virtues.
I love it. And what you said reminded me of the Eleanor Roosevelt quote, "No one can make you feel inferior without your consent." And I think that we need to say that to ourselves as much as we say it about other people. You can make yourself feel inferior, but not unless you allow it. Not unless you allow it. So you mentioned that living healthy is a piece of this Stoic lifestyle. And you mentioned that most people are generally not very healthy. They stay in bad relationships. All kinds of things happen. And Socrates said that we should eat to live, not live to eat. And you tell the story in your book. You say, look, I am a normal weight human being. And yet people are constantly saying, how do you stay so slim? How do you stay so slim? Why do you think that it is so important to craft a healthy lifestyle as a part of gaining this ideal of being able to look at the world philosophically and critically and not get your feathers ruffled all throughout the day?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love it. And I love your approach to healthy living. It's
thank you.
So beautiful. When I researched you, I was like, I'm at home. I was obese growing up. I was couldn't get past the school bus though, being called names. And so I know what that feels like. And I know that when I overate, it was because my parents were fighting and I was young. And so something was bothering me. So I lost the weight because a friend of mine said, you know, you're really nice. Because I said, oh, I'd really like to lose weight. And she said, you're really nice. You're really funny. But, you know, that's up to you. I was like, oh, it is up to me. And so that summer, I decided to walk every day. And anyone who overate in my presence had a choice. They couldn't spend time with me or they could come on a diet with me. So everyone on my road got thin. Went to high school and no one knew who I was. It was very funny. I'd lost 60 pounds and I've kept them off for 37 years. And, you know, I think it's really important for many reasons to do it. And it's not been easy. I know the minute I start getting stressed about something, food is right there. It never leaves. So it is about managing it, but it's not about thinking about it all the time. So what I focus on is the balance in my life. You know, am I loved? In a bad marriage, left it. Now I'm worshipped and my husband's hot. Like, he's so hot. I mean, sometimes I can't even hear what he's saying. And I'll look up and I'll be like, he'll be like talking to me. I'll go, I haven't heard a word you said. You're so pretty.
Uh-huh.
You know, and so I feel very blessed, but I have someone who doesn't undermine me. You know, my ex-husband used to call my walk my selfish walk. That's why he's my ex-husband. So I think that part of it for us as women is depends on the circumstances around us. But once we clean away that clutter, you know what to do out there. Once you clean away that clutter, any of those undermining forces, so that you are fully responsible for your eating and your exercise, and you get into a rhythm that works for you, the thing to remember is this body that the beauty industry has falsely told us we should think about all day, and the minute you finally get your weight under control, all you think about is aging and anti-aging. I mean, it's never going to end. So you have to really let go of that old idea of beauty and go back to what we're talking about from a Stoic perspective. But this body has to take me to 96. Mm-hmm. And that means I don't want to be an invalid. Now, if forces happen and I get some sort of disease that's uncontrollable because it's in my genetics, that's life, and you'll accept that too. But by my own doing and my own health, there is no reason for me to create the kinds of conditions where I'm going to need help, where I'm not going to be able to get up, and where I'm not going to be able to move. Can you imagine? So while I can move, you move, while you can use your body so that it can help you make decisions. The other thing is, when you're clear of mind, because you've gotten your sleep, you've eaten correctly, you've gotten your protein, you've eaten your vegetables, and they're delicious. And you didn't drink every night, maybe on Friday. Then you can make clear decisions, because you get up early before the world starts. I get up at 5. I go to bed at 9:30. 5 o'clock, the world's not there. I'm reading Seneca, Cicero. I mean, these are greats. And then I go to bed early, because nothing good happens after 10 p.m.
Mm-hmm. I know.
That's when I start wanting some popcorn. And, maybe after the popcorn, I want something else because I made something for the kids. So, 9:30, easy. 5 o'clock, get up. I'm not hungry, having a coffee, getting work done. So there's a rhythm, and it's all about finding that rhythm so that you can eat right, exercise every day, move your body, and honor it so that your mind and soul can do what they were put on this earth to do.
Mm-hmm.
We're so occupied with our bodies, we can barely get to the soul and the mind, because the whole world wants us to think about our body all day or our anti-aging, and that's just marketing, right?
Yeah, it's marketing that is telling you you're not enough. You are not enough, just exactly. You 100% are. And, you mentioned Seneca, and Ryan Holiday earlier this year was like, so many people are just living in this stressed out mindset. And he was like, do you think it was easy for Seneca? Do you think it was easy for Winston Churchill? Like, do you think it has ever been easy? I think that we get these nostalgic images in our mind about what was life like in the 50s, and if we could only go back to the 40s, and if we could only go back to this point in time. Number one, we can't. We cannot go back in any time, even if we were to not actually change the clock. Mentally, we cannot go backwards. It's a problem. It's a shrinkage of our collective consciousness when we say, okay, we're going to act like it's 1950 again. We cannot go backwards. We can only progress and go forward and recognize that everything has always been a challenge. That's why we're here on Earth. Why come to Earth other than to learn the lessons and do what you are supposed to do throughout your life? I am so excited to tell you, podcast family, that Thinks, your favorite period absorbing underwear, is launching activewear. That's right. As of January the 12th, 2021, you now have period protection even when you head to the gym. Now, if you've listened to the show, you know that Thinks has been absolutely life-changing for me. I'm going on over a year of only using Thinks for period protection. And now there is an activewear line that features cycle shorts, training shorts, leggings, and leotards with the signature Thinks period absorbing layers built right in. They come in three cute colors: black, kale, and heather gray, and they come in sizes between extra small and extra large, and plus sizes are coming later on this year. That means that whatever resolutions that you have made this year, you can tackle one tiny habit at a time. Whether it's yoga, stretching, being at the gym, working out on home equipment, or simply walking down the street after a workout at the gym, you can now feel confident because each of these products is there to be used either on its own or as backup, depending on your flow. The training shorts and leotards hold up to 5 tampons worth of menstrual flow. The leggings, which I have a pair of and absolutely love, hold 3 regular tampons worth, and the cycle shorts hold up to 2 regular tampons worth. Best of all, the leggings and the cycle shorts come with heating pad pockets. So if you're working out somewhere that it's cold outside, you can simply slip in some pocket warmers to stay warm throughout your entire training session. Period active wear is here, and all of the essentials you need, no matter what kind of activity you're doing, is there to give you the protection and the comfort that you need to have an active period. If you want to get started with some of the active wear or any of the other Thinx period proof absorbing panties, go ahead and head to www.shethinks, that's shethinx.com/Lindsay Elmore, that's shethinks.com/Lindsay Elmore, to save $10 off of your first order. Your workout activity on your period has never been better. Shop now, shethinks.com/Lindsay Elmore. And you have taken a really interesting approach. And listeners, if you head to barbstegman.com, she is offering free access to her award-winning movie, Perfume War. So Perfume War is about you and your mentor, Captain Trevor Green. You guys went on a mission in Afghanistan and decided that you would fight fire with fire because one of the biggest crops coming out of Afghanistan is poppy, which is used to make opium, which is used to make heroin. And you said, yeah, but you could also just grow some roses and grow some orange and harvest it, distill it. And so you're helping Afghan farmers make money without having to participate in the illegal poppy trade. Talk to us about how on earth this idea to use something as simple as perfumery to improve the lives of people who are very often cast aside as third-class citizens. And in the United States, people from Afghanistan and Syria have been almost completely villainized and made to have the perception that they are less than human, which is absolutely incorrect. So what gave you the idea to start with perfumery as a way to empower people's lifestyle changes?
God, you ask the best questions.
Thank you.
Can we hang
out?
Seriously?
Yeah.
You're so thoughtful.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Yes, you got to come and visit me.
I would love that. I would love that. Once all this COVID ends, mm-hmm. I'm coming to visit you.
Okay. All right. I'm going to hold you to it. Uh-huh. Okay. We're going to do a live podcast. Go for it.
I love it. So the book, what was interesting was on the original design on the back of the book, I told all my friends that I saw a perfume bottle, didn't know why. And the reason I want to share that part of it is I thought the design would be so beautiful and it would be a lovely perfume. And the reason I told everyone was because I felt that that was part of my soul, my instinct. Plato and Socrates believed that you're actually on a path anyway. But all the distractions, all the clutter in the world, all the noise keep you from being in the zone. And we all know what that feeling is. We're in the zone. The ideas are arriving. We're getting the solutions. That's all predestined. It's all laid into your soul. It's all there if you're going to listen to it. So I knew instinctively, okay, there's something coming. And if I'm present, I'll see the signposts to what this is supposed to deliver. So I went on with my life. You don't rush it. Did the book. And then I kept reading up about Afghanistan, and that's where I read about Abdullah, this gentleman who was growing the legal orange blossom and rose. And I went, that's the perfume. And in Sun Tzu's Art of War, it's really about study, 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 exert. So the study was in the hospital. The study was writing the book, the study and everything in your life. The challenges are the study. And then when you know what to do and it all culminates and you listen to your instincts, you exert and you exert rapidly. And so when I met with Sida, the equivalent of USAID, I said, help me find Abdullah. I started buying what little oils he had on my Visa card. People made fun. We have a local tabloid. They said, oh, you know, Barb Stegman, the Messiah, is going to save Afghanistan with her one cup of oil. You know, my son was a teenager. He came home from school and kids were making fun. I said, you do realize, honey, that if we're going to do something big in the world, we have to just start. We're not going to fix it overnight, but if we don't start, we'll never get there. And he said, fully, I agree with you. Now my son works with me, trains all our Sephora stores, filmed our documentary in Rwanda with the producer and the director, learned from him. And so imagine if I'd ever let something make fun of me. And I want to continue to show people, yeah, it hurt. Yeah, it was awful. I'm not going to pretend I'm some sort of made of stone. I care about what people think of me, but not enough to let it stop my soul from its service, because I was given this divine soul, and so were you. And that soul is unstoppable. And the more you track into it, dock into it, you listen to it, it gives you the answers. So I bought the oils, started, launched in a department store, and then countries started coming to me. I was invited to Haiti with President Clinton to source vetiver. I've gone to Puerto Rico with Chef Jose Andres, who is there feeding so many people after the hurricanes. And I feel very blessed to be on this journey sourcing oils. We've been to Rwanda. Our suppliers there survived the genocide. Nicholas saved his wife, Elsie, during one of the most heinous genocides. Almost 1 million people were killed in 100 days. And so we buy their oils and we tell the beautiful stories, not the negative. You know, I'm tired of the fanatics. They can hush down. And we're going to get louder with our love. And that's our job.
Yes. Oh, I love that. Get louder with love. Let's just...
They can hush down. Fanatics can hush down. Every time you repeat something that an extremist or a fanatic, whether they're in your country, whether they're one of your political leaders, whether they're a fanatic in another country, doesn't matter. Every time you repeat that, you are traipsing that garbage around. It's like my Marcus Aurelius said, when you meet people, they have ghosts around them, right? They're talking about what someone else said. We don't want to be that person. Mm-hmm. I give it no energy. Absolutely none. Because I have so much energy in the day. And there's a great term for it. They call it anger porn.
Mm.
Yeah. So when someone's thrown at a curveball, a politician or a fanatic, or because they're getting the airwaves, right? When your friends want to talk to you about it or start to say, you know, I have no time for anger porn. Sorry. I've got other things I need to do on this earth, and go do them.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Cause we all, you know, I fussed at someone a little bit on social media the other day because, you know, I made a post about, look, you can stay healthy by sleeping right, eating right, exercising, crafting good human connections, eating fresh fruits and vegetables and blah, blah, blah. And this woman writes in and is like, that would put me in the hospital if I did those things because I have Crohn's disease and this and that and blah, 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 blah. And one of the things that I said was, don't respond in anger on social media. Ever. Like, what does it do for you? It does nothing. And I just wrote her back and was like, hey, reread number 5.
Delete.
Yes, exactly. Just let it be.
It's your page. Here's the thing. What I love about it is that's your conversation. That's your page. You don't represent the government or some corporation. This is Lindsay's page. And so that gets crafted in the way you want to shape the world. And I do the same thing. My Facebook page is Barb Stegman's page. When I go in there and someone wants to start fighting with someone, delete, clean up, you're gone, boom. And everybody goes, wow, yep. And you know what? It's created a culture. Nobody writes junk anymore.
Mm-hmm.
She'll listen now. I just delete it. You have no voice when you disrespect the community. And why not? But we're taught, oh, be nice, ladies. Play nice in the sand. No, you know what? Someone's going to bully or be mean or say something negative. They have no platform with me.
I love that.
Something blessed, something beautiful, and you're creating a gorgeous community and you keep on doing it.
So I think a ton of women get stuck and, you know, women don't get involved. We don't do the things that men do for whatever reason. We think we're unqualified or we think that no one will listen. And I think a lot of women do get stuck in that I have to do what my parents expect of me. I have to do what, you know, my kid's school expects of me.
No, you don't.
Yes. So how can women who are stuck right there in that I have to be this prescribed notion of what a woman is, which is its own type of hellacious bondage. Where do you start in helping women to say, I will not be bound. I will live my life on my own terms. I saw my mom the other day. She was reading a book called How to Say No Without Feeling Guilty. And I was like, you still working on that? Like, you're still working on, like, because I have always been the type of child that was like, no, I'm not doing that. I never struggled with that. I could always tell somebody, no, get away from me. I don't want any piece of you.
Because you know why you're here. You know why you're here.
Well, thank you.
You know why you're on this earth. You know your service, you have your gifts, and you're sharing them far and wide. And so many people benefit from what you do in your podcast, your website, all of your work. And so you know why you're here. And a lot of people deep down know why they're here, but they're letting other voices clutter. And so I think the daily practice, like a muscle, if you want biceps, gotta do a push-up. If you want to be strong of character, because I love this quote. We've all read the quote that says, your character is your destiny. Your character is your destiny, and I'll add to it, and it costs nothing to build your character. And so your character isn't about being some sweet, soft, feminine pushover. Not the way people would like us to be. Your character is to be really dark in, like Lindsay and myself, and we know why we're on this earth. I want everyone to know why they're on this earth, what your purpose is, and go about it with all the passion in the world to your service to others. That's where joy comes. That's where success comes. There, you cannot fail. The crazy thing about this book and these principles of the Stoics is it can't fail you. I wrote a book on it. It still freaks me out. I'm like, whoa, that worked again? Always. But if you're not taught it and you don't have that daily practice of ripping the muscle of your soul, ripping the muscle of your mind, ripping the muscle of your body so that it becomes sharper, stronger, more connected so that your soul can do its work. Well, then let someone else lead your life. Why are you even here? Like, why did you come here? You know, let someone else walk all over you and make you feel badly for being you. It's a lot of undoing. So I might sound a little flippant. I'm not. It's been a lot of work for myself, and we've both done a lot of work. And I applaud people who read the books and do all that work, because it's important. But you know why you're on this earth, deep, deep down. And a little bit of quiet reflection time, which no one gives themselves. So I've come up with a new theme. This is my new theme to everything in life. Get mad, take a bath, have a nap. That's it. That's all you need to do in life. Get mad about something, and go change it. Have a bath, because you need to think about it. So go sit in the bath and stare at the trees and turn off everything and think about what got you mad. Because I was mad when my best friend was axed in the head by the Taliban. And so many people get mad when their friends are wounded. But don't take it out on the people of those countries. Why do you think our soldiers were there? They were there to protect those young girls and those women. And so we've got to take on the soldiers' mission of building peace and creating jobs for those people. So it was about creating more love for them like the soldiers wanted, not the opposite. So you see, get mad, but channel it. So you get mad about something, then you go take a bath and you reflect on it, and then you go take a nap, because science has proven that you take a nap before you go to bed. You put the challenge forth and let your subconscious mind get the answer. So follow that. Everything will be fine. You don't need to do anything else.
Yes. Tell us about your daily practices? I know you mentioned you get up very early in the morning, go to bed very early, but how do you intentionally craft time to listen for the answers? Because that, I think women are like, oh, but I'm busy. I can't do it because I've got kids. I can't do it because I've this, blah, 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 blah. Excuse, excuse, excuse. How do you intentionally craft moments of quietude, even with a husband and kids and a job and you're running a company and you're, you know, working on book sale, all of these things that you have to do, and yet there is still something that you do that helps you to find that stillness?
Oh my God, I love all your questions.
Thanks.
I really honor my soul. I keep coming back to that. I don't waste a day of this precious life. You know, you really, Aurelia said, live this day as if it's your last. Mm-hmm. And every day forth is a blessing and a gift that we didn't have. Mm-hmm. So if today is my only day, then my conversation with you is the most important thing right now to me. And when I take my shower, washing my hand isn't just washing my hand. It's washing my hand and taking time to think about it. And it's about being observant of everything in front of me. And that presence is really where the self-respect comes from, the ideas come from, the management comes from. So with that respect, now imagine, throw menopause into it, which I've just entered. And so, you know, you can't sleep, all those things. So I've nailed that one too. Carbs and caffeine cause you to lose sleep at night, which means you're not rested. Now you can't do anything because we need your sleep. So I don't eat carbs. Once in a while, maybe on a Friday, I suffered for it that night, but that's all right. I sort of take into account, okay, on Friday, I'm having bread with my soup. I don't care. And it has to be that way. Otherwise, I'm just a sweaty mess in bed and I'm up. So I take my melatonin at 9:30. I do my eye mask, which is it's a bean heating thing my eye doctor gave me, because you should do the heated thing on your eyes at night so that your lids get rid of all the dirt from the day. You see, sometimes you see older people and their lids are coming out and they're all red. It's because all their oil ducts have gone back and withdrawn into their skin because they clogged over. So I do this heating thing every night. You can get your eye, talk to your eye doctor about it. They're all about it. It's very important. And that calms me. And I take my 2 melatonin and I'm out like a light. Mm-hmm. And then I get up, I sleep through the night. And so I get my 7-8 hours. So I can get up anywhere around 4 or 5. First thing I do, I leap out of bed. I'm so excited. We have another day. I grab the most delicious philosophy book that I've been dying to get to. I go downstairs by the fireplace now that it's cold, and I read. The cat comes and sits on my lap, and I have my tea. I have a teapot. I also have a teapot that I use in the mornings with the rituals. Rituals are important. You get excited. Instead of thinking about food, which was an issue for me before, this teapot with this rooibos tea, I'm so excited, so pretty. I'm going to have my tea by the fire. I'm going to read this book. And nothing else happens. Around 7, 7:30, I start getting into the emails that are pouring in. You know, we're in Sephora USA, Canada, launching in France. So I've got to start answering all that. Nobody touches that window in the morning. And then I'm efficient because I've had me time. I've been thoughtful. Then I've got to think about our morning meeting. So I got to figure out when to get my beach body workout in. Every day I do my beach body workout. It's hard. I love it. Some days I don't. I shake it up and do a different one every day. Not a day without fail. Can I not have my workout? And then after my meeting, who cares? We're in a virtual world. I go down the hall to my meeting with my family and my sweats. And then we move on. We talk about what we have to do. And then we start interviews, whatever's going on, launching a new perfume. Took 6 months. I'm still sniffing it, going, the dry down is not the dry down of number 74. We've got to get it like sweet off the top, off 02. What are we going to do? We signed off on it. I'm stressed. I go to bed. I think about it. I wake up. I go back to the perfumer. I need you to wear all 3 and go home, please. And tell me about the dry down. We can't sign off on this. I am a pain in the ass sometimes, but it's about getting to excellence. And it's one of my favorite quotes, Robert Browning. It's about a man, but I say woman now. A man's reach should exceed his grasp, or what's a heaven for? So it's never just good enough. It is never, it's got to be excellent. And my favorite idea of excellence, Aurelia said, you have an overripe fig. It's really sweet. It's really delicious. It's excellent, but it's not perfect. Mm-hmm. Take a loaf of bread and it bubbles over and it's crusty and it's jagged. You put butter on it. It's delicious, maybe on Friday. And it's not perfect, but it's excellent. And so everything must be excellent. And so that way, that's why we do well, because there is that thought process. But that thought process can't happen unless I'm turning off my mind and working out where all mm-hmm. the answers come. Then what I do is, before I had an interview with a Quebec magazine, and then we had 40 minutes before our time. I said to my husband, usually we walk for an hour. I said, we have 30 minutes, let's go. We went, we got a 30 minute power walk by the river, by the trees, holding hands. We came back. And so that's my day. And then what we'll do after this is we'll go shoot a Christmas ad video. And then I'm gonna make a baked cauliflower, buffalo cauliflower, cause
nice.
Oh yeah, it's so good. And I only lightly put the almond flour on, very, very lightly, mostly spice. So it's actually not fattening at all, hardly any carbs, but it tastes so good. And you dip it in light tzatziki. Oh my God, mm-hmm. I have a plate of that. And so then what we'll do is, you know, The Crown, the series on Netflix. Oh my God. So then what we'll do is after the dinner, we'll go and completely watch The Crown together, my husband and I together. And then it's 9:30. It was a beautiful day. I got to talk to you. We got to change some people's lives. And then we start again because we're lucky and blessed enough to do that. All those pieces have to come in and make an appointment with my workout, make an appointment with my walk, make an appointment with my time with Cicero and Seneca in the morning. And, you know, it's really important. And we're all at different phases. My kids mm-hmm. are not babies. I know it's hard with babies, but you know, I started my company when my daughter was 5 months old, and my son was five. So I could spend more time with them. So it's all about the lens you're looking through and wasting no time and spending all the time that nurtures you with self-care. Self-love is even more important than self-care.
Absolutely. What you said reminds me of two things. The first is John Acuff. He wrote in one of his many books that a lot of the time we think, oh, I don't have time to write a book, or I don't have time to pursue this documentary that I want to make. I don't have time to read all these things. And he says, no one will ever complain when you get out of bed at 4:30 or 5 o'clock in the morning to read your book or write your book or plan your documentary or all of the things. Your spouse, if you're working on your book at 6:30 in the evening, every single evening, eventually you're going to have strife. But if you say, the only way that I'm getting this book written, the only way that I'm getting this documentary produced, the only way that I'm going to start this new company is to get dedicated hours of time where I can work and focus, get up early in the morning. And another beautiful thing that you said reminds me of the Sod Guru. You said, look, you can wake up every day thinking that life is amazing and wonderful and powerful and meaningful and go to bed with those same emotions. Or you can get up and think, freaking woe is me. The Sod Guru says, the way that you become happy in life is by recognizing your own mortality. Because when you wake up in the morning and you're like, holy mackerel, I'm here, I'm alive. And every day, one person dies for approximately every 10 people on earth. So if you wake up in the morning and the 10 people who are the closest to you, the most meaningful people, if all of them are also alive, you are doing better than most people in this world. And let's be grateful for it. Let's have gratitude. Let's take a minute to recognize that living in this moment of, I am so grateful for how beautiful the blue sky is right now. And I mean that literally. I looked out the window and there's not a cloud in the sky. The leaves have all fallen. So I've got this gorgeous orange leaves with this blue sky, with a tree. There's a bird on it. That's life. That is life right there. So if a woman is listening to this and she's like, that's cute, Barb. You went for a walk with your husband for 30 minutes and got up and read some Seneca at 5 a.m. And you've got daughters that are grown, all those things. if there was one thing that you would say, listeners, if you do this, your life will begin to change, what would that one thing be?
Well, it's a great question. Self-respect. I think deep down, once you have high level of self-respect, no one indignifies you. You will make decisions that are big, life-altering decisions because you respect yourself too much to allow anything to stop you from your dreams and purpose. And I think that's often what we lack, self-respect, deep, deep down. When you respect yourself, you will not harm yourself by overeating or over-drinking. You know, when you respect yourself, you wouldn't do that to yourself. So deep down, somewhere along the way, someone taught us that we weren't worthy, and we have to undo that. And that's really like a hard, a lot of work. And, I think it's important to do, otherwise you stay in the same cycle of self-defeat and having an excuse for why you'll never be that person. Why not you? Why not you? Of course you can have whatever you want. It might take a long time. You got to be willing to work. You got to be willing to work. I mean, hard work and go without has been a big, big part as well. Instant gratification's a problem. Delayed gratification is everything. Everything tastes so much better when you work for it. You know, you go for a long walk or you're raking the leaves, you're with the kids, you got busy, you didn't eat. And then when you came in to have a meal, oh, it was just so wonderful. Everything tasted better because you were hungry. You'd worked up, you didn't have much. Same thing applies to your life. You don't take too much. You don't have too much. So you wake up really excited to have that book. So we don't want to ever get, I think almost people that live in too much wealth or too much poverty are kind of similar because it's that middle where we have to try to stay balanced and not indulge too much.
Yeah.
Because often deep down that is still avoiding something that we need to face. And I think too, you know, we're beautiful. Every woman is beautiful inside and out. And you know, the minute a woman notices she's beautiful or realizes she's beautiful and her soul is beautiful, it doesn't matter how many wrinkles she has. It doesn't matter how big she is or small she is or what she has. She glows and shines when she enters that room. And I think that's why it's worth self-respecting ourselves, to feel that beautiful inside and out so that your soul shines and beams from within you. And I think then we can age gracefully, that we're not anti-aging and trying to deal with what's happening. No, because you know what? That's a beautiful, hey, we didn't die. We're here. That's so exciting. I had friends say to me when we turned 46, I'm turning 52 in February. I had girlfriends say to me, how do you feel about this? Sorry. How do you feel about this 46 thing, turning 46? How do you feel about that? I was like, well, we lost friends that are 49. I'm feeling pretty good. You know, I'm pretty excited. And I watch fading beauties, friends of mine in this age group. It's very hard for them. And that's really sad. Again, back to your self-respect, no matter how old you are and your sense of purpose and your divine. I'm excited about 52. I feel more beautiful and stronger than I've ever felt in my life. I plan on feeling even more stronger, more beautiful at 62, at 72, 82, 92, 92. I want to be that woman that takes her bony little hand, slams it on the table, and they go, whoa, listen to her. That's a goal to have, as opposed to, oh, my aging and my crow's feet and my whatever. So you see the shift in undoing all the things that advertising and marketing and patriarchy and frenemies have done to us. It is very hard to undo that, but it's possible.
Yes.
Let the sculpture emerge. So self-love, self-respect. We wouldn't do anything to harm ourselves if we had deep self-respect and deep self-love.
Absolutely. And I don't know why this is coming to my mind, but it is. I remember the first time that I saw the statue of the Venus de Milo, and I was so overwhelmed with beauty and just amazement and awe. If we could value ourselves with that same awe, that same concept of up under, you know, somewhere buried deep within this slab of granite, you too are the Venus de Milo. You too are the Pietà, which is another sculpture that the first time I saw it, I just stopped.
The majesty.
Stopped. Yes, it is.
That's
so
power
majestic.
And dignity. That's all the power and dignity. It's all power and dignity, not form. Mm. There's the power and the dignity of the sculpture that moves you. Mm-hmm. And that's what we are, the sculptures in the clay too.
Absolutely.
And it's funny, it reminds me of a book I'm reading. I've read it before. I've given it to every friend of mine. It's called Psycho-Cybernetics by Maxwell Maltz. And basically the premise of it is that your body doesn't know the difference physiologically from imagination and reality. So whatever you tell it, it believes. Mm-hmm. So if your soundtrack of your life is, I'm not as smart as my sister, I'm not as pretty as my best friend, then you aren't. But the minute you tell yourself, I am as wise as my sister, I am as majestic as my best friend, you become that and others see it. And that's where the sculpture, like you were talking about. And so he actually has a plan. It takes 28 days. Every day for 28 days, watch your life like a movie. Who's in it? What you're wearing, the success you're having. After 28 days, absolutely everything will be in play. It's like, I call it a spiritual business plan. Mm-hmm. And you will emerge, the sculpture will come out. And so I use that practice all the time, constantly visualizing if I'm struggling with something, whether it's my weight or whatever it may be, because I have to stay slim and not go back to where I was. Otherwise, you know, I don't want to be disabled when I'm older. And so, right? So whenever I'm dealing with that, I remind myself, well, how do I want to see myself? What do I want to do? Then my workout's easier. The food's not tempting because I see the goal, who I am, what I'm wearing, what I'm doing, where I'm going, the success we're having, the people we're loving, the people we're taking care of. And that goes on autopilot and does the work for you. So you don't have to struggle.
Absolutely.
So it's what we tell ourselves. But again, back to self-respect. If we don't respect ourselves, the dialogue we have inside our head is negative.
Mm-hmm. Well, ladies, you heard it here first. Now is the time to exert your own self-respect and be the badass that you were designed to be. If you have people in your life that are holding you back, you've heard me say it once and you'll hear me say it again. It only takes 10 seconds of crazy to get them off your Facebook, your Instagram, out of your phone. You can regret it in 10 seconds, but they gonna be gone and you're not gonna be hearing from them and you're not gonna be telling yourselves those stories of like, oh, I just don't want this person in my life. Barb, one of the reasons I love doing podcasts is because I get to meet people who are clearly sisters from other misters. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your wisdom and your courage and your beauty and all of the things. Everybody head to Barb Stegman. That is BarbStegemann.com. And you can get her copy of her free movie, The Perfume War. And I very highly encourage you to pick up a copy of The 7 Virtues of a Philosopher Queen, A Woman's Guide to Living and Leading in an Illogical World. Barb, thank you so much for coming on the Lindsay Elmore Show.
Oh, thank you, Lindsay. You're amazing. You asked the best questions, and the next time I see you, we'll be live.
Heck yeah, let's make it happen. The Lindsay Elmore Show is written and produced by me, Lindsay Elmore. Show segments are produced by Sue Procco and Kelsey Lorman. Production design, sound design, and editing is by Jive Media. If you have a question about this or any other episode of the podcast, send us an email to hello@lindsayelmoreshow.com. And hey, since you're still here, take a moment to subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. And while you're at it, go over and follow us on Instagram at
Lindsay Elmore Show. This helps us bring the pod to more people.